the In the Pattern podcast, episode 1, cleared for the option.
Alright, squadron VFR, proof exchange proof for my gum. Line up and wait, 7 range, for my gum.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold short on 133, ready to take off.
Alpha Delta 5362, Mike, entering the downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
Welcome to episode 15 of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'm Chris. Along with me tonight is Brad and John. Unfortunately, Mark is still at work, we believe. And won't be able to join us, at least not right away. Maybe he'll be able to pop in before the end of the session. Anyways, what's going on, guys? Good to be back with you. I'm getting so excited for Oshkosh. And I'm glad we're getting some podcasts out in a more, you know, timely manner.
Well, at least we're recording them in a more timely manner.
Oh, yeah. Here's episode 15. And episode 13 is yet to be released at this point.
It is out of my hands right now.
Yeah, you did release it. That is true.
Maybe I released it. It's just not released to everyone yet.
Yeah. Maybe tomorrow. Today is July 11th for everybody.
Yes, it is.
We're recording on July 11th.
Okay, so you all can laugh at me or not laugh at me and say, holy crap, you got this out quick. Once you're, you know, listening to it, and it's whatever day it ends up being.
Yeah, this one should be a little bit shorter, anyways. Being that we're doing these so close together, is a lot less to go over. So, you know, it is what it is. But we did want to get one out real quick before Oshkosh, talking about going to Oshkosh and stuff like that, right?
Exactly.
Speaking of that, so Brad, you're going. And just Monday and Tuesday?
Looking like it's probably just going to be Monday and Tuesday, and either fly back Tuesday evening or Wednesday morning. I might be able to make it down on Friday, but I don't know.
Okay. Hopefully you can. It'd be cool.
I hope so, too.
How far are you from there?
It's about a two-hour flight.
Oh, okay. Commercially?
No.
No. You're flying your own plane.
Right, nice. Two-hour flight by Archer.
Yeah.
So I've been reading the NOTAM.
Yeah.
And reading all the stuff on AirVenture about what ATC expects of you, and looking at all the charts, and I'll probably even fly it in X-plane just to make sure that I've got an idea of what the sight picture is going to look like.
There you go. See if you can go find a bunch of videos on YouTube of people doing the last few years and seeing how they were doing it, and might be a nice tool.
Well, yeah, and you tweeted about EAA did a webinar about flying in.
Yeah.
So I'm going to finish watching that video and see what else I can learn. I did practice some spot landings. I went to the airport the other night and worked on spot landings and power off descents, power off 180s, and all that good stuff just to make sure that I could get the wheels on the dot.
Cool. What's your goal in the spot landing? Is it within a certain distance or just hitting a spot dead on?
For me, it's just getting close.
Yeah.
I got very lucky on my first spot landing in the pattern, and I should have just quit at that point. But I was shooting for the numbers, and I crossed the threshold by about 6 feet. There's a displaced threshold on the runway I was using, and I crossed the threshold by about 2 feet. I actually had to give it a little extra oomph to hold it over so I didn't land short, and hit right on the numbers. And I think that was the only time I hit the numbers themselves. After that, I was just varying degrees of close. And I decided for my last attempt, I was going to do a power off 180. And I started very high and very close to the threshold. And I turned too soon, so I had to do a full slip basically all the way down.
Oh, fun. That's my favorite. Yeah. That's my favorite. I love those.
Yeah, it worked out. But I wasn't anywhere close to the spot, but that's okay. I was looking at the tolerances in the NOTAM, and I will have no problem getting it into the the space needed.
It's okay because you look cool coming in anyways.
Yeah, why is that plane sideways?
You get points for that.
Well, and it's interesting. I don't know if you guys have read the NOTAM or not. It's for AirVenture, there's a lot of short approaches. If you have to come in and land on 3-6 and they're bringing you in south of, I'm sorry, if you have to come in and land on 1-8 and they're bringing you in south of 3-6, you basically turn just short of runway 927 and turn around and immediately land. So you're starting your descent right in the downwind. You're descending all the way as you're going next to the airport. You turn base at probably 400 or 500 feet AGL, and it's a very short base leg, and you basically turn continuously into the final, and then you have to drop. So when you're turning final at a very low altitude, so you know, watch the speed, make sure you're not going to overshoot that turn to final, because there's not a lot of other places to go.
Interesting. And is this your first time going in?
This will be my first time flying into Oshkosh.
Yeah. Under your own plane. Cool.
Well, we flew down last year, but the GA camping was closed at Oshkosh, so we ended up going to Fond du Lac.
Oh, okay.
And that's a much more conventional procedure.
How many times have you been to Oshkosh so far?
Just once. Just the Schloshkosh last year.
What a way to get inducted.
Yeah, well, I'm bringing a lot of repellent.
There you go.
Mosquito repellent this year.
And John, how about you? Was last year your first?
It's my first full week there. I'd been there for about 2 days the year before in 09.
Oh, okay.
I got there literally as they were closing the line to get on the A380.
Oh, okay. Well, this will be my first year, and as you guys know, so I'll be flying in Wednesday night, getting there at like midnight. John's going to be nice enough to leave and pick me up in where is it?
Milwaukee,
yeah.
MK.
Mm-hmm. Driving back, it's about 90 miles out, so it was the best deal I could find. Everything else was nearly $100 more, so it was. I have other plans for those $100, is, you know. So appreciate you coming out and picking me up, and then I'll camp with you Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and then we're gonna take off Sunday. You know, I should have thought about it before, but I should have checked with Bill Will to see Bill Williams, see if he had an empty seat going back, because I think he's got an empty seat coming out. So I could have probably just flown back with him on Sunday, which would have been a blast. But at this point, I've already paid for the ticket, so whatever. That's what I get for getting all ticket purchase happy. Get it done before they start going up and becoming limited.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah. So very, very excited for that. And the only thing left to do is what? You gotta buy the camping spot for us?
Yeah, I do. It's still to get the camping spot, but that's not, you know, a big deal, obviously.
Yeah.
Doing a camp shoulder. But that's about it. I got the tent fan in the other day. Slowly my batteries have been coming in. I bought a bunch of D batteries, AA, AAA. I got everything but the Ds right now, so the tin fan's kind of worthless until I get those Ds. But once those come in, I'm pretty much set at this point.
Nice. Yeah, it looked like a nice tent.
I got the dry run in. 4th of July weekend, I went camping up in just north of Frederick, right around Camp David. And so got the tent set up. As long as it doesn't rain too hard, we're good. Like any tent, you know, if it's pouring down rain, it's going to come in a little bit. There's just no getting rid of that. But it did real well.
Good.
Huge tent, 15 feet by 9 feet.
Oh, that's like an 8-person tent. Nice.
Yeah. So we're going to have plenty of room.
You could have rental space.
Uh-huh. Well, I've been posting out there. If anybody wants a place to sleep.
I know.
Especially the first half of the week.
Yeah.
Split the cost with you.
Heck yeah.
Not that there's run out of space. It's just a matter of splitting the cost. If you want to, go for it. if you're a poor student pilot like I was, you know.
Yeah. And I was looking at the AirVenture master schedule, man. It's, I can't just the amount of stuff going on every single day, every single hour. Like,
don't even look at the schedule for your first year. Don't look at the schedule because you will not follow it.
Oh, you, right? I don't see how you could. I'm not a good person about following schedules anyways, when it comes to going on vacations and stuff like that. I don't like to have an itinerary. This one person was like, I think I need to be in three places at one time. Yes, you need to clone yourself because there's so much to see and do.
I made a full thing on full schedule with Osh Planner last year. And I don't know, by the end of the week, I realized I had done maybe two of the things I had put on that list. And I had, like, you know, 100 stuff on the calendar to do. I'd done about two.
So yeah, we got the AirVenture app on the Android here. That is pretty darn slick. That map feature is going to be pretty cool, I think. Might help for finding my way around for a first timer.
Yeah, no. It makes it look so small. Yeah. Once you realize how far it is to get from, like, Warbird Alley to the ultralights, you'll understand.
I'm looking for a quick way to get from the North 40 to Kid Venture.
There's the shuttle stuff, but that you gotta catch.
Right, I have to catch it. Although my son would enjoy riding on it, so that's not
skateboard,
all bad.
Bike.
Well, you can't bike outside of the campground.
You can bike on the Kid Venture, can't you? Because it's not on the grounds. That's outside the gate.
Right, we could do that. We could do that if I can find a way to fit his bike into the back of the Archer.
Yeah, that's difficult to do, even probably for a small bike. Well, I don't know. With the wheels off, it might fit in that baggage spot. I was thinking about what it would take to get my mountain bike into the back of it, and the frame's just too long. I'd have to actually pull out the back seats, and I'm not sure they really want me to do that to their rental plane.
Do it.
I just leave them. Leave the seats where the plane was tied down at. Hook the chains up to them. Now it's utility category.
In so many ways.
We're qualified to spin it. Well, I'm not qualified. Okay. The plane might be. But
I don't think archers are qualified even in utility. You can do 60-degree banks, but I don't think that they're. You can do utility category spins.
Oh, really? I thought I read somewhere
can't
you
spins
could.
In it?
I thought I read somewhere you could, but I could be wrong.
You can in the 172. It's just really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know in the 172 you can, but I'm at least on ours, I think it's placarded that it says that you cannot do it's not certified for spins.
Hmm. Interesting.
So anyways, anyone doing any flying in the last couple weeks?
I wish.
Yeah. Brad, you've flown a couple times?
Just a few, and just local stuff. Yeah. Nothing too exciting. I haven't had a chance to get any IFR training in, so I'm still stuck. Although, by the time I get back from this trip, I'll be within striking distance of enough hours to get my checkout in the Aero.
Oh, cool.
So I may actually get checked out in the Aero before I finish my IFR. Just because.
Mm-hmm. Then you'll get your complex endorsement?
Right. That'll be the complex endorsement, and the insurance company wants us to have 10 hours of dual and 100 hours of total time. So the 10 hours of dual plus the hours I have now, I'm at 89 point something. And the 4 hours I'll have to getting to Oshkosh and back plus the 10 hours of dual for the complex will be enough to get me over the 100-hour minimum. And then I can fly a retractable plane and go 135 knots.
Nice.
Nice.
So it's just 100 hours total time.
100 hours total time.
Cool. Yeah, that's after I get my ticket, I'll probably sign up. Well, I can't yet, but I want to sign up for the Flights for Life and do blood runs with my buddy Dean. But they, I think you have to have 100 hours minimum before you can sign up for them too. So next year, I guess.
Probably.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
He just flew Sunday up to Flagstaff for a blood run. And his 140, I said, hey, I'll go with you. And he goes, well, the 140 kind of becomes a one-person operation during the summer.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Because you might be able to get into Flagstaff. You just might not be able to get out with two people in the 140.
I noticed I was flying the Warrior the other night doing my touch and goes, and it was hot, and the runway was 2,500 feet, and that was short. It was not climbing out the way I would have expected it to, with just me in the airplane. So I had one landing where I floated it a little bit. I had one where I stuck the landing, and so I kept a little bit of extra speed on the next one, and it was too much. I floated it. I touched down, and I went, I'm not going to try to take off again. did the full stop taxi back.
There you go. Yeah, my instructor Jackie had the Archer I fly with a student. She says he weighs like 115 pounds too, so you know, shouldn't be much. And so they went to Flagstaff the other day, but when they left, density altitude had already reached close to 10,000. It was right about 10,000, and when they took off, they were doing everything they could to get 250 feet a minute, which is crap because, you know, the Archer on a decent day can do anywhere from 750 to 1,000. Well, maybe not with two people in it. It can do 5 to 750 all day long with two people in it, and by myself I can get 1,000 pretty easily. But yeah, out of there at 10,000 feet, you probably lost, what, 30% in your horsepower?
Yeah, I'm thinking about that. In terms of the flight down to Oshkosh, I'll probably be at a decent altitude unless I can get out early in the morning. I won't be at a decent density altitude, nothing like 10,000 foot of density altitude on the surface. But we get so much turbulence here in the summertime.
Ugh.
On a clear day, you get the sun beating down on the fields. Some of the fields are brown and they're making lots of heat. Some of the fields are full of corn and they're pumping out all kinds of humidity, and it just makes for very turbulent weather.
Yeah, yeah.
So you climb out over the top of it, go up to 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 feet, and if it's only climbing at 250 feet a minute, it's going to be hard to get up there.
Yeah, yeah. It might take a while, but like I think right around 8,000 feet is the Archer's sweet spot, 8 to 8,500. To where you can get it really nice and leaned out and get good fuel economy and should be in pretty good weather. It might just take a while to get there, huh?
Hopefully not too bad.
Yeah. So I went flying a little bit last week. Day after the Haboob. Everybody saw the videos of that nasty-ass dust storm. That thing was...
That was bad.
Oh. I went outside and turned on Ustream for a while from my cell phone to see if anyone wanted to see it. A couple of people joined on, but from the back of my house is up against a street, and you could barely make out the houses across that street. So it was like 50 yards away. So 100 yards, you couldn't see anything, and 50 yards, you could barely make out a house. And they said that dust storm was, you know, 60, 70 miles wide and 6,000 or 8,000 feet high, and it was moving as much as 70 miles an hour in places.
So did you grab the plane and go get some actual?
Yeah, no, not so much. Yeah.
Did they like note him the airport's closed?
I didn't look at any NOTAMs, but I did tweet the actual METAR at the time. You saw that, John. You see how many different codes was in that thing?
Yeah, that METAR was pretty ridiculous. I definitely had to bring up the something online just to figure out what some of it meant.
Let me see. I'll see if I can find it. Oh, I don't know if it'll... It probably won't be saved. Even if I click on that link, I'm sure it won't be there. I was going to say we could throw it in the show notes. It was pretty ridiculous. But I did go fly the next day, and I went out to the most disgusting airplane you ever saw because it was just caked with dirt and dust and everything. And so I got there at So I got there at 5 a.m. Well, I got there a little before 5 a.m. I wanted to be like, you know, wheels up at like 5:30 at a minimum. I got there a little before 5 a.m. and went out, and this plane is just a pig. I grabbed one of the ramp guys and asked him for I asked him if he wanted to tow the plane over so we could like hose it off with the pressure washer. And we went and checked, and the pressure washer wasn't working. So he goes, "I'll get you a bucket of water." And then he actually asked, "Is water okay to put on the windshield?" I'm like, "Well, it does rain from time to time.
Even though in the rain,
we are in Arizona, I understand, but it does rain." He goes, "Oh, yeah, okay." So he just wanted to make sure it wasn't going to scratch the windshield. So he got me kind of a hot bucket of water, and I cleaned off the windshields and then used the windshield cleaner and got them all cleaned off. And got started up and got ATIS, and ATIS is reporting that that runway 7 right and 25 left are closed, and taxiway this, and this are closed, and a bunch of other stuff. So it was like, it was so much stuff that I listened to it like 3 times and was so confused to the fact, is the airport even open, you know? And from where I was sitting, I was like, okay, well, 25 left and 7 right are closed. You know, I think the other runway, is open. So and they didn't mention that I couldn't taxi across the runways to get over there. So I did that. And then I turned on ATIS again and listened to it 3 or 4 more times. And then after that, I was pretty much sure that the airport was shut down. And so I shut the engine down and I called my CFI. And I go, "Jackie, can you listen to ATIS for me? From what I gather, nothing's open." But rather than saying the airport's completely closed, don't turn on your engine, don't even move your airplane anywhere, they just went through basically taxiway Alpha 1 through Alpha 13 is closed and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't even know if I'm supposed to even be on this side of the airport at this point. And so here it is at like 5:40-something. You know, I've wasted this much time just burning fuel driving around the airport. And she goes, "Okay, I'll check." So she checks and she calls me back. She goes, "Yeah, I think," she goes, "do you see any X's?" Because they bring out like these steel I-beams with X's on them and put them on the runway. I go, "No, this, everything's clear." She goes, "I think it's an old message that they should have got rid of a few days ago. I'll call them and check on that. But I think you're okay to take off where you are." I'm like, "Okay."
This is a towered field?
Yeah, but it's before the tower's open. The tower opens at 6, and,
gotcha.
And I'm there at 5-something. So anyways, I start back up the engine. It's 6 o'clock. Tower comes online. Clears me to take off. I totally, you know, jerked around and wasted like an hour. I could have took off on the other side of the runway, on the other runway if I wanted to. It was so, so confusing. It just sounded like everything was shut down. And I'm a newbie, you know, I'm a student pilot. I don't want to get busted for doing something wrong. And I know it's about 6 a.m., so those guys have to be up in the tower by now. So, you know, I don't want to get busted for anything. So, anyways, I finally got taken off. And the reason why I'm flying this day is because I needed to redo my long cross-country where you land at two different airports other than the one you took off from, you know. And because I did that, I did a long cross country to Kingman months and months ago, but I wasn't able to land at my second airport, which was Prescott, because the winds were like 30 knots. They were ridiculous that day, and the winds were just getting worse. I remember when I took off from Kingman, it was the winds were pretty high, but they were straight down the runway. So my CFI agreed, yeah, you know, definitely don't go to Kingman. Just fly it back to Deer Valley. And I think because your intentions was to land, that we can probably just count it for you. But she checked with Bruni, my DPE, and she says, no, we better do it. You know, you better have it in the logbook. You know, when it comes down to it, who couldn't just write another airport in the logbook? I've landed in everything, just about everything out here in Maricopa County, plus other counties for that part. I've landed at just about every airport on the map that you can land at this point. But so I went ahead and flight planned a long cross country. This time I did from Deer Valley down to Gila Bend, which is southwest, and then land there, and then head off to the east and land at Williams Gateway, and then back to Deer Valley. And it was about 152 miles, 153 maybe, something like that. So just over the minimum 150. I wanted to do it as close to the 150 as possible, so as not to waste any more money or gas.
Right.
Because I've already did this once, you know. But
so when you were on your cross country and you realized that you couldn't, that you weren't going to make it to that destination, and so you landed, you had already landed someplace and were just checking the weather at the next hop. Was that it?
No, I'd landed at my first hop in Kingman and had lunch.
Right. Okay.
And,
that's what I meant.
Yeah. And checked the weather for Prescott before I took off, and it was just too bad. So from there, I made a phone call to my instructor.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and she couldn't clear you to land anyplace else because it has to be a written endorsement.
I don't know. We really didn't discuss it, but the winds up north where I were getting bad. And, you know, it was more or less just a safety thing that if I left and went somewhere and landed, and by the time I took back off and got back to Deer Valley, that the winds could have been kicking up pretty good there too.
Sure. That makes good sense.
So unfortunately, you know, I had to kind of redo it, but you know, flying's fun and you know, I had a good time on this, really. I took off early enough in the morning, although I wanted to be off the ground nearly an hour earlier than I did because I got to work at 8 in the morning. So I'm flying, and I take off. I get the okay to frequency change from Deer Valley, and what I do is I call Glendale Airport, and I just let them know. I said, Glendale Tower, Archer 354, Mike Alpha, just departed Deer Valley. I'm going to be I'm on my way to Gila Bend. I'm not going to be going over your airport, but I am going to be close to your airspace, just letting you know I'm going to be by. And he said, hey, thanks for the heads up. And if you want, you can contact Luke Approach because Luke Air Force Base is open this morning and you could probably get flight following. So I was like, excellent, thanks for that. And so I jumped over to Luke Approach, got a hold of those guys, and they gave me flight following all the way down to Gila Bend.
Nice.
I love flight following. It's just my favorite. You know, it's just that sense that you're not alone, of course. It's almost like someone's sitting in the seat with you.
It is
sort of, you know. So this was the day after the Haboob, and so I'm getting kind of out of town now, and next to some mountains. Let's see, I'm trying to look here. The mountains are about 4,500 feet that I'm going to be clearing, and so anyways, I'm at because Bravo is at 3,000 feet where I'm going through, and then it goes to 4,000, and then it goes, you know, to 40, to way, way higher after that, 6,000 and so forth. So I'm cruising just on the deck at like 2,500, which is our TPA for Deer Valley. So when I leave Deer Valley, I'm flying, you know, 2,500 for, I don't know, 20 miles. And once I get out of Phoenix's Bravo a little bit, Luke Approach, you know, says, hey, you know, you can climb as desired. So I'm like, okay. And so I start climbing, and I notice these mountains. I'm just barely able to see the peaks of them, and the rest is just this cloud-filled base of dirt. It's just disgusting. I'm just barely able to see the tops of 4,500-foot mountains that I'm heading straight for. So I'm like, climb, 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 getting up there. It was really disgusting looking from all the just, like, dust particulates still sitting in the air, you know. But while I was up there, I figured, you know what, something I've never done before, is the autopilot. So I popped on the autopilot, the Aztec 55X, very nice autopilot. It's got it's a three axis, and but so I just turned that on, and it goes to nav automatically by default. No, not nav. It goes to
if it's like ours, it goes to the roll. It has a manual where you can dial the roll that you want.
Oh, okay.
But it might just go to heading.
Yeah, heading is what it was, and so it's locked onto one of the VORs, you know, and it starts turning. I'm like, oops, let me grab the heading bug. So I turn the heading bug back to my heading because I'm locked onto the Gila Bend VOR at this point. And so I was like, that is so cool. And I'm like turning the plane left and right by just moving the heading bug, and the yoke's moving by itself. I'm like, this is really cool. kind of a weird feeling, you know, but it worked so well. It was awesome. So I'm like, all right, let's try the nav button. So I hit the nav button. Of course, I'm already locked on to the VOR down there. And again, it just stays its course and does a real good job. So I just played with it for about 15 minutes, and I turned it back off and didn't use it again. But I just wanted to get a sense of how it worked a little bit. I didn't put in an altitude hold for it, but of course that's one of the other functions that it will do. Maybe later. So anyways, got down to Gila Bend, and then did a full stop taxi back there. Took back off, headed east towards the Stanfield VOR. And so these two VORs are almost parallel with each other. The Stanfield's just slightly south of the Gila Bend. So I was tracking one to and one from at the same time. So that was good practice. Got down there and then headed towards Williams Gateway Airport. And Williams Gateway used to be an old Air Force base, so it's a pretty good size airport. There's three runways, and I called and got I pulled up ATIS, and it was 5 miles visibility, and which explains, you know, that dust storm. And it was just all brown and nasty out, and they were right. I could barely see the airport from 5 miles away, even at 5,000 feet. But I got a hold of them and asked him. I said, am I going to be a right downwind? Because they approved me for a 1-2 center. So this will be my first time landing on a center runway. 1-2 left and right are pretty much used by Allegiant Airlines. They fly DC-8s, I believe, out of there. So I was approved for 1-2 center. And I told him I was going to do a full stop taxi back. So I landed on 1-2 center. And it was really cool because it's a large, you know, they're large runways. I think they're 150 feet wide. And so once you got over top of them, it just felt like your airplane was going so slow because the lines were going by so much slower, you know. They were so much bigger. So did a full stop landing there and taxied back, took back off. And this is the fun part. If you really want to get good at your radio work, you come down here and do this little trek where you go through Gateway and then over top of Falcon Field and then over top of Scottsdale and then back to Deer Valley, because a Williams Gateway to Falcon Field, they're only 10 miles apart. They're only 10 miles apart, and one airspace almost overlaps another one. That little section, there's several airports. There's actually, you can actually add Chandler there because Chandler overlaps with Williams Gateway a little bit. But so, anyways, you gotta get off the ground, let Williams Gateway know that you need a frequency change ASAP because you're gonna be flying over top of Falcon Field, Mesa's Falcon Field. And you gotta get a hold of those guys real quick. So you do that, and then you gotta be released from them to get a hold of Scottsdale. But that's not a big deal because there's about 3 miles or so, 4 miles between the two airspaces between Scottsdale and Falcon. Scottsdale and Falcon's about 13 miles apart. But Falcon to Gateway's only 10 miles apart, and their segmented blue lines, blue dash lines, are practically touching. So it's kind of fun if you really want to practice your radio work and see how fast you can, you know, get everything dialed in and switched over and handed off and so forth. That's a good routine to run. I've did it about four times now. I always like doing it. It's pretty fun, and they're always very helpful. So anyways, got back to Deer Valley for a straight-in approach to runway 25 left and put away the airplane, 2.2 hours on the Hobbs, and it was overall a pretty good flight in some very dingy-looking weather. But that's done. I've got everything accounted for in my logbook as far as my solo time, my hood time, my night time, dual time, solo, the whole bit. So I'm all set as far as that goes. And I just got my cross-country flight from my flight instructor, and she got it from the DPE, Bruni. So now I know what she wants me to plan for. I just hope that the weather is decent enough to actually go fly on Friday morning.
So Friday's the day?
Supposedly. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a Thursday night oral and then Friday morning fly, because I don't want to waste time Friday morning doing the oral and letting it get later and later in the day as it heats up to do the flying portion of it.
That makes good sense.
Yeah. It's not horrible in the morning. So she'll meet me at like 6 a.m. to go fly. So we're going to do the oral Thursday night, like at, 5:30, 6 o'clock, something like that. But for that, I got to drive over to Goodyear Airport, I believe. Normally, she would just drive over to Deer Valley, but she isn't going to drive it twice, you know. So I got to go drive and meet her for the oral. And that's really the only part that I'm nervous about. They could just ask you just about anything. And I understand it's pretty much an open book test, but you don't want to be going to your library every time she asks a question. And I'm not good about just picking up a book and reading it and being able to regurgitate that information back to you. I may know it in my head of how I understand it, but for me to relay it to you after only reading it a couple times might not be the best. So that's what I'm working on right now, is really trying to brush up and study for anything that looks like could be a stumbling block for me. I'm not so much worried about the flying part at all.
Probably the most important thing is to know where in the books you can find it.
Yeah.
That will help you tremendously, because if there's something you don't know, you can say, hey, you know what? I honestly don't know off the top of my head, but I know that I can find it here.
Mm-hmm.
And realistically, when you're out in the real world, you're not going to have remembered every FAR or everything that's in the AIM, right? And what they want you to do is, when that happens out in the real world, that you go crack open a copy of the FAR and figure out the answer to your question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I need this particular endorsement, or what's the visibility rules for VFR, or can I get special VFR in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
And they want you to be willing to actually in real life crack open a book and look it up.
Yeah, that the FAR AIM's not my best friend yet. I've been starting to tab it out to find, you know, but I don't know. Am I tabbing out stuff that's actually going to be useful to me when it comes time for this, or am I, you know, I don't know. It's so hard to play Karnak and just try and guess what someone might ask you.
Well, it's kind of becomes a little clear, especially with the written, which FARs they really want you to focus on, which is things like, you know, the seat belts or, you know, what stuff.
One of the ones that I just tabbed tonight was 91205. And that is what equipment's required for visual flight rules.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to be a big one.
Tomato flames.
Flames, yeah.
And that's actually where I learned a lot in my oral too, is because he showed me, because I knew that one, and then he was like, well, where else can you find it? And I was like,
it's in the POH.
There. And then he showed me the equipment list in the POH, and he said, look, things say optional or required right there in the POH. And I was like, huh, yeah.
So speaking of that, like several weeks back, we were getting ready to fly, and during the run-up, the amp meter was blacking out on us and going dead and coming back. you know, and according to the minimum equipment list, we don't need it, but it sure is nice to know that your alternator's working, you know, so that's why we didn't fly for a week or so, week and a half.
Right. I don't even know, does the panel light, does that actually key off of the alt of the same gauge? Because there's a light up on the panel above the air attitude indicator.
The annunciator panel?
Yeah, the annunciator panel.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that light would come on with an alternator issue. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure it does because we pulled the circuit breaker for the alternator, and I'm pretty sure it came on. And then the ammeter is just a digital rectangular gauge up in the upper right. Is that what the way yours is?
No, I've got a analog gauge.
Analog gauge, okay. Yes.
I have a digital one. We get a low volt though too. If you don't get enough voltage in the system.
Yeah.
So the 172 has an annunciator as well. I know for a fact both the P and the S models.
I know when I'm taxiing and I get to a part in the taxiway that starts going downhill, I reduce my RPM because I normally taxi at about 900 RPM or so, and I'll reduce it down to like 600 RPM, and annunciator lights start coming on and stuff because I've got, you know, low voltage.
And that's traditionally when you say it.
Yeah. So anyways, you want to hear my flight plan, so to speak, that she wants me to do?
Go for it.
All right.
You're going to fly the whole thing.
Yeah, right.
You're totally going to fly it. All of it.
We're going to fly 5 minutes of it probably, right? So Deer Valley to Flagstaff, but before getting to Flagstaff, I have to stop off in Wickenburg for we'll be landing there. And then leaving Wickenburg, we're going to fly to Prescott, and I'm actually going to land there and pick up a passenger that weighs 200 pounds. And then from there, fly over to Flagstaff. Question is, can I do that on that particular day with what fuel I have on board, and will the plane actually manage that? So, and I have 80 pounds of baggage. So I got to figure out my weight and balance, of course, and based on the temperatures we've been having lately, I could probably tell you in my head I wouldn't even try that, but supposedly Bruni weighs 150 pounds. I weigh about 170, and we're going to add a 200-pound passenger or so, and 80 pounds of baggage. Yeah.
Hmm.
Maybe in the middle of the night.
If the passenger's in the front seat.
Yeah, maybe I'll tell him, okay, I figured out how we do this, but you got to sit in the back, Bruni.
There's no doing that with the 172 unless we take out a ton of fuel.
Yeah. I'll have to find out. The Archer holds 48 gallons of fuel usable, 24 in each wing. To the tabs, I believe it's 34 gallons.
You are correct, sir.
Yeah. So we always usually just fly at the tabs. Unless I do a longer cross country, then I'll put more fuel in it. So this will be one of those days where we have to really decide how much fuel I'm going to burn on the way to those two airports. By the time I get to Prescott, will I have burned off enough fuel to allow a 200-pound passenger onto the plane?
And will you have enough left?
Yeah, to make
with
it
with enough reserve.
Yeah, to make it to Flagstaff. They're not really, really, really far apart though. But we are dealing with altitude at that point. You know, 6,000-8,000 feet. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. I'm excited to get it done with. I just hope that the weather holds out long enough to make it. Let me see. I'm looking here with my Let's see. Flagstaff is 47 miles away from Prescott. But Prescott is 5,045 feet, and Flagstaff is 7,014 feet. It's all uphill with some mountains as high as 11,700 feet along the way, but I just go around those. But still, I'll have to be at like around 8,500 feet just to clear some other mountains and get into Flagstaff. So climb, climb, climb all the way. So it's a good one of the it's one of those good problems to see if you can actually do. I haven't actually attempted one of these the way this has been described quite yet. So we'll see if I get it right the first time or if I screw it up.
I bet you'll be fine.
I hope so. This is the part that I'm most comfortable with. It's stupid oral. I might be making more out of it than what it is too. I've watched John King and JC several times, and I think I want JC as my DPE, to be honest with you. I think I've got his oral exam down perfect. Have you seen that one, Brad?
I have not. No? I haven't seen the King ones. I've just I've read about it and I've been through the process, and I kind of, you know, kind of know what they're looking for now. But at the time, of course, I didn't, and so I was studying everything and nervous and worried about how it was going to go. And of course, it went just fine, and the guy was phenomenal, and I learned a ton.
Yeah.
We didn't do anything with altitudes, though, because everything here is 1,000 feet.
Oh, nice.
Everything. Nice. I will drop between here and Oshkosh, which is a two-hour flight, at 110 knots. I will drop 40 feet.
I didn't know you were in Kansas.
It is flat here.
Wow.
Everywhere I flew was, I don't know, sea level.
Yeah, we got mountains all around us.
I'm sorry, I dropped 60 feet.
Wow.
At Deer Valley yesterday, when I was there, Deer Valley's 1,575 feet, but density altitude put us at about 5,000. It was, that's just typical for this time of year.
But you don't get humidity.
We are right now because of the monsoon season. We're at
What's your dew point?
Let's see. We've been in the like 30-some% humidity. Well, right now the dew point's 57 degrees Fahrenheit.
14°C, yeah. Whereas here, let's see, what do we have? Temperature 24, dew point 15. So the relative humidity is quite a bit higher here. And it's dry. That's dry for us.
Yeah, right now the temperature is 95 degrees Fahrenheit and 57 degrees dew point.
Yeah, that's really dry.
That's dry?
Yeah, we commonly get dew points in the 70s.
I have to chew my air to eat to breathe right now. Are you kidding? I have to chew and swallow. It reminds me of back in Missouri, you know, that's where I'm from originally, and
right.
That's humidity, man, back there.
Right, same thing. We've got, it's the land of 10,000 lakes, and guess what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You probably have plenty of actual to go see and fly in with as many lakes there is around there. Plenty of moisture in the air.
Yeah, you know, we don't get a lot of fog in the mornings. The airport that I used to fly out of, the St. Croix River ran just south of the airport. And if it was just the right day, you would get just a 1 or 2 knot breeze, and it would lift a layer of fog out of the valley where the river was, and the entire airport would be 0-0 visibility, but only about 25 feet thick. So if the runway was long enough, you could land a 747 there, and they would never have a problem. They would never hit any actual. But a Piper would be unable to land because it wouldn't be able to see anything.
So hopefully weather holds out and I'll be able to do this thing, knock it out and be done with it. I'm tired of messing around with it. I should have been done nearly a month ago now, but of course if something can go wrong, it will go wrong, and one delay after another. If it's not the weather, it's the airplane. If it's not the airplane, it's the instructor availability, you know.
So of all the maneuvers on the PTS, which is your least favorite?
Probably unusual recovery stuff under the hood.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else I like doing, but I got nauseous when I was doing that with Jackie, and then trying to read a map and doing lost procedures and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh man, I'm getting sick. But it was a little bumpy that day. If the air is smooth, I don't mind it. steep turns, eights, S-turns, turns around a point, no problem, stalls, slow flight, all good. I like all that. It's funny, you know how the Archer just keeps a nose-up attitude and it doesn't ever drop over. You actually have to willingly push the yoke forward. It does not drop, or it just, you know, you're dropping out of the air with your nose up the whole time.
Right, right. Yeah, you can descend in a nose-up attitude very easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. When you come in and you start your approach and you pull the engine to 1500 at the numbers, you have to push.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you put in the flaps, you have to give it a nice shove.
It does.
That's where trim comes in handy.
Yeah.
You trim it right out, but you have to push it for it to start to nose down and descend.
Does yours have an electric trim, Brad?
Our Archer does have electric trim.
You ever used
it? I have. The only time I've found it helpful is in IFR.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'll reach down and use the wheel.
Yeah, I've never used ours yet. Jackie kind of scared me with a story about a runaway electric trim.
Yeah, you have to know where the kill switch is. I won't turn it on normally because I don't want to deal with the idea of it going off the deep end,
mm-hmm.
and either pitching up or pitching down. I know I can overpower the thing.
Yeah.
But I don't. If I'm not going to use it, why bother?
Yeah, yeah.
I like the wheel, the trim wheel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's something about reaching down and just using the wheel that just seems natural to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
And that's a big thing, like when you're doing your steep turns and stuff, especially to the left, where you got that left turning tendency to start with.
Trim is your friend.
Yeah. Trim to keep you from having to like pull like a gorilla on the yoke to keep you from descending.
And that's the thing that I learned most quickly in IFR is trim is your friend.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that can help you not have to exert any thought or energy on keeping the aircraft straight and level, anything that can help you to divide your time is a win. So
yeah.
I got really good at dialing in the trim to the point where it's there within 20 feet.
Yeah. Yeah, even during takeoff, get off the ground and get yourself into the right pitch and trim, and you don't have to be pulling back on the yoke. It'll just keep climbing for you.
Yeah, yep, exactly. And when you're again in IFR and you're doing the approach, a lot of times it's set up a 500 or a 700 foot per minute descent, and you don't want to be holding that in by hand while you're trying to dial the ILS in on the nav radio and all the other junk that you have to do. Just get it set up, trim out the pressure, and let the airplane fly.
There you go. Do you have any older equipment on your plane, like a DME?
On our Warrior, we have a DME. We actually have we have a DME on all of them. I don't even consider that older, but 'cause you use it all the time in IFR,
yeah,
for flying DME arcs.
Yeah, there's DME approaches or something.
Right. You oftentimes will have to fly an arc on a DME in order to get set up on a on a localizer approach. So they'll tell you to maintain to fly along the 12-mile DME until you intercept the localizer and then turn inbound. So you have to, you'll pick it up at maybe 180 degrees. On the off of the VOR, and then you have to follow that arc at 12 miles out up to, let's say, 280 degrees, where you'll pick up the ILS and the localizer, and you turn inbound and follow the localizer for horizontal guidance, and then the ILS for vertical guidance all the way down.
The Archer I'm in just has the two Garmin 430s in it. And that's it. There isn't any other type of navigational equipment. Well, the VORs, of course, but
right. That you've got dual DMEs.
Yeah, because they obviously tell you.
RNAV.
Yeah, RNAV, right? They obviously know how fast you're going and how far away you are, and calculates the distance and time and all that for you.
I think they actually. I'd have to look. I think the Garmin actually has DME in it, so it'll pick up DME even if you don't have GPS.
Hmm. I have to check that.
So you can fly DME off of the VOR, or you can fly it off of the GPS waypoint. So the machine I did all of my training in, my primary training, had an RNAV in it, just a DME RNAV. And so you could set up virtual waypoints and all that kind of weird stuff that nobody does if they have a GPS in their plane. But you can, like, if I wanted to find the home airport where I was, since I didn't have a GPS, but I knew it was 7.5 miles on the 160-degree radial off of the St. Cloud VOR, I could dial in that synthetic waypoint and fly right to it as if there was a VOR on the field.
Yeah, yeah. With the Garmin's, I mean, you can throw in a specific Latin long if you wanted to.
Yeah, and I couldn't do that. I had to have a VOR as a reference and be within DME range.
I see.
That sounds like a lot of trouble putting that into a Latin long.
Dialing in a Latin long by hand?
Yes.
I don't know if it'd take too long. I mean, if you had the coordinates, adding it to your waypoint list.
It just seems like it's a lot of dial turning.
Yeah, it might be.
But you should have plenty of time.
Well, I'm going to do it before I ever get off the ground.
Precisely.
Put a whole flight plan in while you're at the ground.
True, but at that point you have the engine running. You're still running the engine, so.
No, not necessarily. Yeah. You can have a GPU and not be running the engine.
Yeah, but we don't have any of that at airport.
And they won't give you one because you're renting, and they'll say, hey, if you got the engine turning, I'm making money.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No GPU for you, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, I accidentally ran down the batteries on 4Mic Alpha because I was showing one of Jackie's other students, who's a friend of mine now, how to do flight planning within the Garmin 430 and how to just do other stuff he hadn't seen yet. And I went out there one night and was showing it to him, and the next morning the battery was dead. Oops.
Use the simulator.
Yeah, I'd actually sent him the simulator too. After that night, not before it, so we could practice at home. Yeah, Jackie said, "Yeah, if you want to do that, that's fine. Just go have one of the cutter guys bring over a GPU to you to power up the airplane, so you don't have to have the battery running." Like, okay, lesson learned.
Yeah.
The members of the In the Pattern podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with, the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, these guys are student pilots, so anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on an aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.
Anything else?
Yeah. It's apparently been an interesting few weeks at Martin State. One of the planes, actually one of the ones I flew, 9er Echo Papa, apparently had a prop strike the other day at Cambridge.
Ruh-roh.
Some student pilot on a solo cross country came in, porpoised, and bent the prop.
Forgot to add power. Yeah. Porpoised and pushed, basically.
Yep.
Or did that thing that who was the pilot from India? The wheelbarrow landing?
Oh.
Oh.
The uncredentialed pilot from India who was...
When it just landed on the...
She was landing an A320 on the nose wheel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And we just porpoised for 300 yards down the runway.
It wasn't even porpoising. She just set it down on the nose wheel like it was the mains, and just let the airplane settle in. I don't know how that works.
I don't either.
I was thinking of a different video.
Eventually it didn't work because she collapsed the nose gear, and then people started asking questions.
Yeah. No, so somebody did that, and then I found out the other day another student pilot at actually another flight school on the field was apparently taxiing in high crosswinds. And flip the plane.
Oh.
Yeah, keep that thing dialed in. That's an easy one to forget, too, especially after you've been flying a while, to remember to point the ailerons into the wind.
So I got the picture. Somebody sent me the pictures of 172 on its back with no nose gear anymore.
Two expensive mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
you guys
luckily
have renter's insurance, right?
Actually, I don't. I was going to get it, but because mine's owned through a private LLC, a private company, private individual owns it, or the LLC owns it. The deductible's only $1,000, and even in the case of the plane going down, they're covered for loss of income, automatically. So, because I checked with the AOPA about getting it, and they were like, well, check to see this, this, and this, and this. And I guess most deductibles are either $2,500 or $5,000, and ours is only $1,000. And like I said, it's covered for loss of income. So, because we did have a prop strike earlier where one guy
– I don't know if I'd call that a prop strike.
Where they drove – yeah, flew it in – or walked it into a rubber cone. Yeah, it didn't hurt the – it didn't hurt the plane at all, but still they had to tear the engine down and check.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
Now this one, I saw the pictures of this one, and it was, I mean, it was bent a good 2-3 inches.
He made
into the prop was bent.
He made curly fries out of the prop.
Yep.
But think of how nice that brand new engine is going to run when it comes back on the line.
Oh yeah.
I'm it should be back before too long, I think. I'm not sure how long it's been in maintenance or when it actually occurred, but I may have to take it out at some point, knowing full well that that one's just gone through maintenance.
Yes, for all the student pilots that are listening, when you bounce the landing, do not push.
Yeah. There's a reason my instructor would yell at me when I tried to do that.
Yeah, I only did that once.
Yeah.
I still remember this, I was learning how to land, and it was, I'd done a flight a couple of days beforehand and eventually had gotten it into my head. I'm about an average stick and rudder pilot. The place where I do well in flying is the head work. It's easy for me to stay ahead of the airplane and visualize what's next and anticipate and all that kind of stuff. But my stick and rudder skills are about average. It took a while for me to pick up the whole, how do I land the damn plane? And it came in the next time to practice again. And, he's sitting in the right seat and we take off set up to land at, over at St. Cloud, where there's a nice long cement runway. And I'm coming in and I'm descending. And I think I set up the flare at about 25 feet.
737 approach there, huh?
Okay.
And he's like, just go around.
Yeah. You're like, that's what I was going to do.
It's like the stall horn's going off and we're still 20 feet up over the runway. He's like, just go around.
Wow.
And it got better after that, but it took a while.
Yeah.
Sight picture. Just a...
I had the hardest time with it. On the Warrior, it turns out that there's a hinge. The Warrior has a little different cowling than the Archer. Mm-hmm. It has it's not one big piece that you lift off like it is on an Archer. It's hinge. There's two piano hinges on either side, and either side you can lift up. Well, as it turns out, one of those piano hinges is exactly in front of the nose of the PIC, whoever's sitting in the left seat. And you can use that piano hinge to help you figure out, am I lined up straight on the runway? Because that was the other thing. I couldn't do crosswinds because I couldn't visualize what the plane looked like when it was straight on the runway. I just could not get that into my head. And finally, he's like, you see that hinge, that long piano hinge? Just look straight down that to the end of the runway. And that will, when that's lined up on the center line, you're ready.
Nice.
And that was what did it.
It's like a sniper scope.
Yeah, it was. It was like a sight.
Nice.
And that was enough to do it. And once I figured that out, once I kind of knew what it looked like, I didn't need the damn piano hinge anymore. I could just land the plane. So
Yeah.
Do you use that for doing like steep turns and stuff? Use that as your point on the horizon, like point the hinge on it?
You know, no. I never really have done the just use outside references. I always just use the altimeter.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was doing in the beginning, and she's like, you gotta look outside. Keep the nose, you know, but my horizon changes so much. It's like there's mountains, now there's no mountains. Now there's mountains, now there's no mountains. Like, what the hell? You can't keep it on something if it's not there all the time. Terrain changes too much.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's pretty flat out here, so I don't have that issue.
Not a problem that I have.
Speaking of airplane accidents, see the video I posted of the P-51 big beautiful doll and that kind of got touched in the air by that Sky Raider. That was nasty.
Touched?
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch that until after Oshkosh.
It's probably for the best. Because,
That's the one thing that really worries me about going into Oshkosh is a midair.
Yeah.
I'm going to have my eyes and my son's eyes looking all over the place for airplanes.
Good. You have somebody else in the plane with you, Yatsk.
Yeah. Well, he's almost six, so.
Daddy, what's Hang that?
A 6-year old spotting airplanes is probably going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're going to be on
Daddy,
the ground.
Daddy, airplane.
You got him a booster seat?
I actually, you know what? I recommend this. I fly him in his car seat.
Yeah. That would probably work good, huh?
He's a lot more comfortable in it because it's something that he knows, and it raises him up about 3 inches, mm-hmm. so he can see outside better, which means he throws up less.
Well, that's a plus for everyone.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. All right.
Yeah, just keep the chicken dinner in the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the one thing I forgot to mention in the last episode was I got selected to do the tweet up for the Pilot Day 11 at the Smithsonian, the Udvar-Hazy Center. Mm. So anybody who listens to the Airplane Geeks, it's the day that they did their live episode that they all finally met each other. So I get to do the tweet up there, which involved being at the center at, it was 5:45, I think, in the morning I was there to go out and do the FOD walk. It's a very early morning, but it was totally worth it because we got... We did a FOD walk on the ramp where they were going to park the GA airplanes. Then we got to watch all of the planes come in. So a C-130 was already there from the night before. And then while we were there, one or two F-15s came in, a couple F-18s came in, a couple Super Hornets came in as well. So it was the F-18, the original, and the Super Hornet. I'm not going to remember what it's called. Something Hawk. Hawkeye. Hawkeye came in, which also has a distinctive blade sound, kind of like a C-130. You know how you just know it's that plane when you hear it?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one of those prop ones that just has the coolest sound. I love the sound of those things. And then we had, Chris, you'll like this, two A-10s.
Oh, yes.
That had tracer rounds in them.
Ooh.
In the gun. And they had it all open on the static display, you know, sitting there.
Oh, okay.
So we got to watch all of these planes come in before the museum even opened. The museum didn't open until 10. I think the planes started coming in at 7:30. It was a bunch of the military planes, and there was also a ton of general aviation. So there was a Fleet 2, I believe it was, that came in, and that was actually given to the Smithsonian that day. It was flown in, and that was it. It was property of the Smithsonian that day.
Mm.
So they had a really cool ceremony about that, and the coolest thing about it was, so this is a 20s-something. It's early biplane. And it was apparently the first plane that was made as a civilian trainer. So that was its purpose. Mm. And so it's trained like all these people, you know, it's a big train airplane, and it trained somebody who was a comic artist, and I don't remember the name right now. But the coolest thing was, is the guy's given this speech, the guy who owned it, and he's the one who restored it, and he's just given the speech about the plane and how awesome it is, you know, and how he loved the plane, all that kind of stuff. And then apparently this 16-year-old kid who was there had his first solo in that very plane that morning.
Nice.
Had his solo, and then they flew the plane to the Smithsonian and gave it to him. It'll never run again. So that's the last kid who got his solo in that plane.
Wow.
And it was the coolest thing because it's a bunch of pilots there. So as soon as he said that, everyone starts clapping for the kid. And I was like, this is so cool.
That's outstanding.
Yeah. And I was petrified flying a 172. I can't imagine how that kid felt in a 1920s biplane that's about to be given to the Smithsonian that day.
What could go wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. How historic.
Yeah, it was really cool. And it's a beautiful plane. I have pictures of it that may or may not make it into the show notes. I still haven't uploaded them. I'm working on it. But they had a bunch of stuff there. They had, you know, older planes. They had biplanes. They had Stearmans. They had but they also had a few Cirruses. I saw a privately owned Skycatcher. It's the first one I've seen that wasn't one of the Cessna ones that they take to Oshkosh.
Uh-huh.
So they had that. You know, they had Archers. They had a Navion.
I love those.
And we got – I know you do. I think I sent you a tweet on that one. And it was nice and blue, and it was owned by one of the women who she goes to Oshkosh every year. So that plane probably will be at Oshkosh. So if you see an Navion with a big teddy bear, it's hers. And I'm talking a big teddy bear, like a 4-foot-tall teddy bear. So it was really cool. We got a tour of the inside, you know, with one of the docent-led tours, which was really cool. We got to see all the planes leave. We got to talk to listen to one of the astronauts give a speech. We talked to a bunch of people there. It was definitely a packed day, but it was really cool. And we got one of the other cool things that we did was we got to listen to one of the SR-71 pilots give us a talk about the SR-71 in front of the SR-71 that he flew.
Ooh.
So he flew the one that's in the Udvar-Hazy Center. So he's talking all about the SR-71 and what it's like to fly it. And then it turns out he also gave all of us signed pictures that he took of that plane when he was doing a chase on that plane. He signed them all and gave them to us.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
Really cool. So that was an awesome day, and I'll try to have the pictures up by the time we have this out. But I wanted to mention that because it was a lot of fun. So I know this is the first Smithsonian tweet up. Kind of got sparked off the Goddard, the Sun Earth Day 11 tweet up that Goddard did in conjunction with the Smithsonian, but that was still a NASA tweet up. And so that kind of sparked Smithsonian to do one. So they did this one, and it went really well. So I know they plan on doing it again next year for Pilot Day 12. So I hope more people will, you know, they'll let some more people than 25 in, hopefully. So everyone gets a chance to do that because it was a lot of fun. And I know we've been picking at them to do a tweet up for when the Discovery comes to the Smithsonian and then they do the swap with Enterprise. So I'm really, really pulling for them doing a tweet up for that.
That'd be cool.
Because I think that would be cool because they're landing Discovery on the 747 at Dulles, taking it off, putting Enterprise on, and rolling Discovery into the hangar. So
awesome.
That's going to be real cool.
Very sweet. That is one of the places in the next 5 to 10 years that I want to fly to is out to see the Smithsonians.
Well, do your SFRA training.
Yeah, I know. I got to get my endorsement.
It's not an endorsement. It's just an online course that you have to print out.
Oh, I thought there used to be an endorsement for it. Maybe I'm wrong.
There isn't now. It's literally you go on the FAA website and there's the fast one.
Okay.
And there's about a 30-minute course in the SFRA and what it's about. And at the end of it, you print out a little certificate that you need to keep with you. And that's about it.
Do you need to do that if you come in IFR?
Probably. I think regardless, you're going to have the training for it.
Yeah.
You will not have to do all of the flight plan and get your clearance, you know, get your transponder code and all that, because you already have one.
Right.
But you're still going to have to do the training. Just because you're entering the airspace period, they want you to know the intercept procedures and how everything works. And there's the ADIS, the laser lights and all that.
And if you do the training, then you can buzz the White House and the Washington Monument too. So,
no, that's separate, actually.
If you want to land on the lawn.
If you want to get in the freeze, you have to do a full background check, which involves a couple days, you know, going to a place in the city to get fingerprinted and all this kind of stuff. It's a pain.
You got to get a secret clearance?
Pretty much.
Actually, almost a top secret, I guess.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Well, what sucks is that there's three airports that are inside the freeze, the no-fly zone, or flight-restricted zone, I guess is what freeze would be. And I know College Park is one of them, and College Park is, what, the oldest airport in America, I thought, or something like that. It's the oldest something airport in America. But they can't have flight training or anything like that, because the only people that can fly in there are people who have gone through the special training, and you have to have some special code that's only yours and all this other stuff. It's complicated. Luckily, the SFRA itself isn't as complicated. It's pretty easy. So, but definitely that is one of the museums to go to. The one on the mall is pretty good, but the Udvar-Hazy Center is just so big. It's, you know, you got to go to both of them, but. So that's what I had. Not doing much flying lately. Still trying to figure out when I'm taking my brother up. So I'll get to that soon. Hopefully before Oshkosh, maybe not. We'll see.
It's quickly approaching.
It's quickly approaching. So hopefully, I have to have this episode out before then.
There's just not enough hours in the day lately, it seems like.
There's not. But I will do it. Because we're gonna do some live episodes.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out how we're going to manage that, but
well, if Brad comes on Friday, we can definitely do one on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't, we're going to have to Skype two people in at some point if they want to be part of it, or just do one with the two of us or whatever.
We just take our laptops over to the Wi-Fi area or something.
Well, there's a couple ways I'm thinking about doing it. I will have my laptop and I will have this fancy microphone, which will probably work for the two of us.
Okay.
The other option is to take my laptop and fancy microphone to the My Transponder trailer that they said they were going to have for social media and do it there.
There you go. Okay.
So I'm going to talk to them about that, because that may work out pretty well.
I thought you was going to use a Pringle can and make a cantenna.
Yeah.
So we can get some Wi-Fi from six blocks away.
It'd work out pretty well. We'll see. I got to talk to my transponder about it, but I'm definitely going to do dailies, to some kind of daily or every other day or something. Especially while you guys are there, I'd like to do something like once a day, like a little 10-minute thing, and get it up. Because it's going to be really hard to cover the whole week.
Yeah.
So much going on. So. Yeah. But there will definitely be stuff coming out of us at Oshkosh. I mean, tweet the podcast at In the Pattern, and you know, if you want to meet with us, somebody from the podcast will be there all week. I will definitely be there all week, and Chris and Brad will be there through part of the week. So
look for us with our fancy new In the Pattern shirts.
Yeah,
ooh-wah.
With a new logo. So so tweet us, meet up with us. We'll be at all the stuff. My Transponder, Meetup, Osh Bash, the Bacon Parties.
Is there gonna be any time to actually see any airplanes?
you know, I haven't quite figured that out yet.
I have to figure out if I can make the bacon parties, because I've got two bacon sandwiches coming to me.
Oh,
I got one bacon sandwich coming to me, and I'd like to state that my friend Tim had the first bacon of any bacon party ever. last year. He apparently had the first piece, and that's his claim to fame now.
You so. Gotta be famous for something.
Yeah. Might as well be about bacon.
First bacon.
Yeah. But those bacon parties it was so much fun. So I'm excited about those. So anybody come to those, please.
I enjoyed the UCAP Line and Kugel redistribution project.
Did you go to that one?
Oh yeah.
Nah, free see, beer? I didn't make it to that, and I don't remember why. I was doing something that night. But
I don't think I had more than 10 or 12.
And that was the My Transponder party.
Oh my gosh.
That's ridiculous. Were you there at the live show though?
No, I couldn't make the live show.
So I was at the live show, and when they actually gave them the Liney's UCAP thing.
Right.
And that was impressive. And they're doing another live show Wednesday at noon, I believe. So that's on my calendar as well, so I'll be there. Chris, you're not in yet.
I'll be listening to it online. I have to clear my schedule.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there live, so you know, come find me there.
Of course, maybe something will happen to the plane and I'll be stuck there.
Oh, darn. Can you
20 bucks, I'll help you out there. Yeah.
Prop strike.
Uh-huh. Just a blown tire or something smaller.
So you guys have anything else you want to go over before we get into listener mail and shout outs?
That's all I can think of.
No, right. I got nothing else.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and move on to we got listener mail from Ken. He is a young aviation enthusiast from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. So we have non-US listeners. I'm shocked.
We have gone multinational.
Oh yeah, we're international all day.
Wow. So you just said you loved all the great aviation podcasts out there. They keep his passion for aviation going and keep up the good work. So we'd like to thank you all for that. And everybody who listens, the aviation podcasts are pretty much what kept me going through my training. So, just want to say thanks to that. And we'll try to keep the language a little cleaner as he suggested, basically by beating Chris over the head with something.
Yeah. I'll be nicer.
Probably the stall horn.
Yeah.
We'll drive him off the road. Him out completely.
I'll be better. I promise.
So we've done good this episode.
Yeah, this one's gone well. We apologize for episode 14
in advance or after the fact.
It's because it's not out yet. Yeah. Actually, no, that was 13, not 14.
Oh, you're right. You're right. 14, we apologize for 13.
I just got the files for, so I haven't listened to 14 yet. So
we also apologize for episode 14.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's some oopses in there.
Yeah.
But thanks, Ken. We really appreciate you writing in, and it's good to know that somebody's listening to us and enjoying it.
And shout-outs?
Shout-outs. My Transponder Social at Osh. Woohoo!
Shout them if you got them.
You there.
What day is that again? What date and time?
Ooh, that is Thursday, and that is...
Another one I'm going to miss.
AOPA or Sennheiser booth? You know what?
So in 2013, Oshkosh will not happen during my son's birthday, or vice versa. My son's birthday won't happen during Oshkosh.
More time for you then.
That increases the odds that I can be there for the week.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, I want to see if I can get the whole family to come out next time.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
I thought about bringing the girlfriend, and then I realized this probably isn't a good idea.
Yeah.
But the My Transponder meetup is 6 o'clock, according to my calendar. So that may or may not be correct. I do not remember where it's located off the top of my head, and yeah, it's a little difficult to look for it. So maybe that'll make it to the show notes.
Let's see.
That's going on. The bacon parties, I actually don't know when they are. I know there's supposed to be a few of them. That's from Air Pigs.
I think there's a Wednesday and a Friday, and I don't remember when the other one was.
Okay. Well, Friday also is Osh Bash at 6 o'clock. That's going to be the EAA something or other by the tower. We went through this last episode. Listen to that.
Right.
Did I put EAA or did somebody else put EAA?
I put EAA on there. Hey, we're going to AirVenture. Who hosts that again? Oh yeah, the Experimental Aircraft Association.
That's right.
So a big shout out to EAA for having the world's best aviation get together and fly in.
And it is a ton of work. Like I can't imagine how they I can't figure out how they pull this off every year.
Mm-mm.
I really can't.
No, and it's so well done, and the people are so nice.
It is worth my $40 a year. It's worth more than that, but
I put my shiny new EAA sticker on my truck today.
I got mine on one side, AOPA on the other. I also had another shout out to Chris Cromwell, who is a very good friend of mine and my girlfriend's. He's the one who did our awesome new logo,
which is fantastic.
Which is appeared as of the recording of this episode on the feed, on the website, on everything that I can remember. So if I forgot something, I'll fix it. But
and thanks for putting up with us and all of our suggestions on how to quote improve unquote the logo.
Yeah. Only seven revisions. Not too bad.
AKA, oh, the wing's in the wrong place. Oh, wait a minute. That rudder's not big enough. The poor kid's not a pilot.
Can we have windows on the plane?
No, but man, he did an
nice
awesome
work.
Job.
Yep.
It turned out beautifully, and definitely hats off to Chris for doing all that.
Yeah. So he's currently working on his personal site right now, but he's an artist out in California. He just moved out there after he got his degree from UMBC. So a website you can see some of his other stuff at right now is vimeo.com/ccromwell, and that's Charlie, Romeo, Oscar, Mike, Whiskey, Echo, Lima. So check out his website. Thanks again. Awesome job.
And I had a shout out to John and Rose Dorsey. Rose has been tweeting pictures of the dots being painted on to the
new
runways.
Ones on plus.
Yeah,
lots of nice ones. And she posted one from the tower, and I just sort of pretty much jokingly replied back and said, "Hey, how do I get up there with my son during Oshkosh during AirVenture to check out the view?" And both she and her husband replied back to me saying that it's basically not something that would happen during AirVenture. But they both said, stop by anytime and we'll give you a whole a tour of the entire airport other than during AirVenture.
Very nice.
So a big shout out to John and Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah, those
are cool
picks.
I'm looking through the ones on Google Plus right now that she posted of all of them. Man, that is cool.
Mm-hmm.
You don't realize how big those dots are. Or the amount of paint.
Especially when you watch the planes fly right over them without hitting them.
So, for the record, the pink dot is Aurora pink. Officially. And you cannot freeze the paint.
So, I'm kind of hoping that they give me a threshold landing. But if you see 94461 Charlie come in and you know, just tell everybody that you saw it hit the dot. That's all I ask.
I'll be there with the camera.
Well, that's the nice part is you won't hear the number. They won't ever call the number. You'd have to be sitting there all day.
I know when you're coming in. Dude, FlightAware is there for a reason.
It won't help you.
He ain't gonna have
even
a
if I,
flight plan.
Ah, that's right. You're not
you
IFR.
You can't have a flight plan, except
get
IFR.
Get some flight following on the
you
way.
You cannot
there.
Do flight following hit. Within 70 miles.
Yeah, but that's fine. As long
you
as
to,
I know when you're in Wisconsin, I have a win.
You have to cancel your VFR flight plan at Ripon. You have to have your transponder on standby from 30 miles out of Ripon.
You know, I can't imagine what that radar would look like with everyone with their transponders on.
And everybody hit ident.
Now, with the plane, with the white and gray stripe ident.
Yeah, so you can listen to, by the way, for the listeners, you can listen to, I think Live ATC has the tower and the various approach frequencies monitored. So you can listen to them over the radio, and eventually you'll hear about a white Archer or Cherokee, they'll probably call it, white Cherokee with maroon and gray, and hopefully that won't be followed by "is at the end of a smoking hole."
No,
that'll be me.
No. We'll pass on the smoking hole.
Now I listened to that probably half the way to Oshkosh last year. We started listening to it in the morning when the airport opened, and that got us through the day. It was awesome. I loved listening to it while driving up because it gets the excitement going a lot. Because you're hearing all these people come in, and it's like, man, I'm going there. And then you get into north of Milwaukee, and then you start seeing the planes everywhere.
Yeah, right.
And then you're right next to the field, and it's just all you see is stuff in the air. And I was like, this is cool. But they have an Android iOS app, and you can stream. I believe if you have Flash, or there's a couple other methods.
Yeah, you can stream it to just about anything that can get an internet connection.
Mm-hmm. So. The EAA radio app, or the EAA, one of the apps on iOS last year had the stream.
Okay.
I believe.
Yeah.
Or maybe I was listening to the Live ATC app. I don't remember, but I was doing it off the iPad.
I've got my GAC sign. I'll print it out for my arrival. You have to have GAC to tell them you want to go to General Aviation Camping. And I've got my VFR sign for a VFR departure. So I am set. I got my tie downs. What else do I need? All that good stuff.
You know, I'll be honest. I seriously considered getting some tie downs to tie down my tent.
To augers.
Well, I'm sorry, the little metal stake things, I don't trust those.
They will last longer than the fabric.
Yeah.
And that's all you need. Put them in at an angle and you'll be fine.
I don't know. I kind of want the claw in there, you know?
Yeah. You'll have the claw with a little loop of Mylar or whatever attached to it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, after the storm in the middle of the week last year that basically inverted half the tent.
Jeez.
We got a gust of wind that inverted one of the poles and hit me in the head and woke me up. So
one of the nice things about going for only 2 days and flying VFR for only 2 days is that there's really not all that much variance in weather that I need to worry about. Because if I can make it in and out VFR in 2 days, the weather isn't going to be that bad. Otherwise, I'm driving.
Yeah.
The only one I got is a shout out to Stephen Forrest. Good job on your very first acro. What is it? The competition.
That's great.
IAC 88. Nice job. Wish you well in the future and doing more of that. It sounded like a blast. Cool picks from the event. I think he took second place. Good job. Even though it was only out of three, but still.
Yeah, but he kept second place.
That's right. He did. He did. He's got the plaque to prove it, too.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, again, if you finish the acrobatics competition and you're not in a smoking hole,
yeah,
that's a win.
Yeah. That would be so much fun as long as you didn't throw up through your routine. So, good job on keeping it down.
Yeah.
So he had his safety pilot sitting. He says, "I got my safety pilot in the trunk, obviously the back seat." But that'd be so weird having someone doing an acrobatic competition and you're just sitting in the back seat as the safety pilot, having no control over these, crazy maneuvers. That'd be so strange. Maybe not for him. For me, it would be.
Yeah, he's done it all through training, though. So
yeah. But that's about it. Cool. I think we're wrapped up, ready to put this one to bed.
Yeah, I think that about wraps up this episode.
Excellent.
You can reach all of us at In the Pattern Podcast at podcast@inthepatternpodcast.com. On Twitter is In the Pattern. It's my transponder group for In the Pattern Podcast. And lastly, you can find us on iTunes as In the Pattern Podcast. You can reach me, John, at john@inthepatternpodcast.com. Or on Twitter and my transponder as Pilot Conway.
Chris?
Yeah, you can find me at chris@inthepatternpodcast.com as well. On Twitter at CHOLUBAZ. That's CHOLUBAZ. And my transponder is also CHOLUBAZ. And Mark?
Yeah, you can find me at mark@inthepatternpodcast.com. Student Pilot Mark on Twitter. And M. Lacoste on my transponder. Give us a shout.
I'm Brad Kane. You can reach me on Twitter at Bravo, Romeo, Alpha, Delta, Kilo, Oscar, Echo, Hotel, November.
I am Kane, K-O-E-H-N, on my transponder, and Brad at inthepatternpodcast.com.
And lastly, if you'd like, you can leave us a text message or a voicemail. The phone number is 707-PCAST-01. That's 707-PAPA-CHARLIE-ALPHA-SIERRA-TANGO-01.
Well, that wraps up this episode of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank y'all for listening. Remember, make left traffic, you're cleared for the option.
And other great shows at the Aviation Podcast Network.
TheVoicesInYourHead.com.
Okay. Episode 15 Zulu. Let's go.
15 Zulu?
I'm going to break it up into 26 4-minute segments.
Oh, boy. Talk about losing audience share. How pissed off could they be? John, where did John go? John left
Hang
us.
On. Sorry, the girlfriend came out and was asking me a question. What were you guys talking about?
How dare her? This is important stuff.
You're making an awful lot of noise there.
Yeah, I've got a chart out. Do you hear voices?
Always, yeah. But the drugs help.
Oh, okay.
No, very much so right now.
Yeah, my family just walked in. They were gone, leaving me to myself for a while.
No.
It's about me.
That's true.
It is.
I'm sure.
I won't say that. Anyway, we got.
And I apologize for it in advance.
It's cool.
Or after the fact.
And I just listened to 14, so. Obviously, you didn't heed that advice.
Well, I didn't realize.
Go ahead and read it.
A lot of that. Anywho. So, at the airport, that's what you're looking for. A black Verso with an EA sticker on the back. And a remove before flight an air freshener that's hanging from the...
Rearview mirror?
Rearview mirror, yep. Yeah.